Imagine living in a world where rulers claimed absolute power as a divine right, where your property could be seized at the monarch's whim, and where questioning authority was treason. This was the reality of 17th century England when John Locke penned his Second Treatise of Government, a revolutionary text that would ultimately transform political thought forever. What makes this work extraordinary is how it systematically dismantled the foundations of absolute monarchy and built in its place a vision of government based on consent, natural rights, and limited power. These ideas didn't just remain academic theories, they became the blueprint for modern democracies worldwide, from the American Revolution to constitutional governments across the globe. When Thomas Jefferson wrote Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, he was channeling Locke's vision of natural rights that no government could rightfully violate. In Locke's view, humans originally lived in natural freedom and equality, guided by reason and natural law. People controlled their actions and possessions independently, with no inherent authority over one another, challenging divine right monarchies. This freedom was constrained only by natural law prohibiting harm to others' lives, liberty, or possessions. The natural state provided two powers, self-preservation within natural law and the right to punish wrongdoers. However, as communities grew, this arrangement proved inadequate without established laws, impartial judges, or consistent enforcement. This insecurity led to the social contract, a voluntary agreement where individuals surrender certain natural rights for security and accept majority rule governance. This consent theory placed political authority in the people rather than God-appointed monarchs. When forming political communities, individuals surrender their rights to unrestricted self-preservation and punishment, but not absolutely. People relinquish these powers only to better protect themselves and their property. If rulers violate the public good, people retain the right to resist and establish new governance, a revolutionary concept that later inspired democratic movements worldwide. Locke revolutionized property theory by positioning it as a natural right, existing before government, not created by it. His theory begins with the premise that God gave earth to humanity in common. Through self-ownership of one's labor, people rightfully claim what they mix their labor with. Gathering acorns, hunting, or cultivating land transforms common resources into private property. Natural limits initially existed. One could only take what they could use before spoilage, leaving enough and as good for others. Money changed everything by enabling unlimited accumulation, since it doesn't spoil, justifying inequality while maintaining consent through people's tacit agreement to currency. Locke argues private ownership benefits humanity through increased productivity. Cultivated land produces far more than wild land, with labor creating 99/100 of product's worth. The bread-making process shows how human industry transforms almost worthless materials into valuable commodities. This theory established natural property rights predating government that cannot be arbitrarily violated, making property protection the very purpose of government rather than a privilege rulers could distribute. Locke's government remedies the state of nature's defects through established laws, impartial judges, and reliable enforcement. Its purpose is securing natural rights to life, liberty, and property. This creates four legislative limits: rule by established laws applied equally, laws aimed at public good, no property taken without consent, and no transfer of lawmaking power. These principles shaped constitutional protections globally. Locke divides governmental power into three functions: legislative, making laws; executive, enforcing laws; and federative, managing foreign relations. While the legislature holds supreme authority, all powers remain delegated and accountable to the people. Executive prerogative allows flexibility to act for public good without strict legal prescription, yet remains bounded by purpose and public judgment. This framework balances necessary authority with essential limitations to prevent tyranny, influencing democratic constitutions, particularly the American system, with its limited government, separation of powers, and protection of individual rights. Locke defends the people's right to resist tyrannical government. When rulers violate public trust, authority reverts to the people. This occurs when the legislative is unlawfully altered, or when legislators act contrary to their purpose. Rulers who invade people's property or reduce them to slavery put themselves in a state of war with the people, forfeiting their power. Locke redefines rebellion as the breaking of established laws, often by those in power who abuse their authority. When government dissolves, people regain their natural liberty to establish a new legislative. The people themselves judge when government has violated its trust. Examining conquest, usurpation, and tyranny, Locke refutes alternative claims to political authority. Military victory grants conquerors no automatic right over conquered populations. Usurpation is the illegal seizure of power, while tyranny is power exercised beyond right for private advantage. A governor substituting his will for law becomes a tyrant. Where law ends, tyranny begins, encapsulates Locke's view that legitimate authority must be bounded by law and directed toward public good. Any magistrate exceeding legal authority may be rightfully opposed, though resistance must be proportional and undertaken only after clear violations of public trust. Locke distinguishes between family authority and political power, challenging theorists like Filmer, who justified absolute monarchy through paternal right. This distinction confronted the dominant philosophy equating kingship with fatherhood. Parental power exists temporarily until children develop sufficient reason. It belongs equally to mothers and fathers, extending only to discipline that strengthens children's capabilities. This authority is a trust to prepare children for freedom, not arbitrary dominion. When children reach years of discretion, parental command ends, though respect for parents remains. In early societies, fathers often became leaders through consent rather than paternal right. Children's habitual deference made this transition natural, but this historical pattern doesn't justify hereditary absolute power. Leadership was based on merit and consent, not inherent right to rule. Political power must be grounded in consent and aimed at common good, rather than justified through natural hierarchy or paternal authority. The temporary nature of parental power contrasts with the permanent authority claimed by absolute monarchs. 3 centuries later, we still grapple with Locke's fundamental questions about legitimate authority, governmental limits, and justified resistance. His answers that legitimate authority derives from consent, government power is limited to protecting natural rights, and people may justly resist tyranny continue to inspire those seeking both freedom and good governance. From the American Revolution to modern democratic movements, Locke's principles have provided the philosophical foundation for opposing tyranny while establishing legitimate government through constitutional mechanisms that balance authority and liberty. When protesters challenge authoritarian regimes or citizens question government surveillance, they invoke Locke's principles of consent and limited power. His legacy endures in our political institutions and discourse about legitimacy and human rights. In a world where power corrupts and liberty remains fragile, Locke reminds us that government exists to serve people, not the reverse. The social contract isn't merely historical theory. It's the ongoing commitment between citizens and government that must be constantly renewed, with rights existing not as gifts from government, but as the very reason governments exist.